would you say would be your analysis of the role that social media has played during the current bushfires?
Well, I think we're seeing social media at its best during times of crisis. I mean, from traditional media outlets like the ABC that have very effectively used social media to communicate quickly with affected local communities, through to people in those areas who are able to communicate with each other when they've got cell phone coverage, to let people know exactly where the fire is, or to let them know they're safe or that they need help, right through to, I guess, you know, internationally, we've seen world leaders and celebrities sharing their sympathy for the survivors of the bushfire and the victims as well, and most importantly, helping raise money to support the firefighters.
Now, the story of Mallacoota has, in particular, been shown with how one person's active tweet was able to garner global attention for the situation, which might have otherwise gone unnoticed. So do you believe that social media has been important in sort of mobilising global support?
Oh, look, absolutely. There's no question. I mean, I think Celeste Barber, who's an Australian comedian, has, you know, attracted a lot of international traction and has raised, I think, it's in the hundreds of millions now that have been raised. And, you know, and you saw at the Golden Globes just the other night that, you know, Russell Crowe made a speech about the bushfires, and then a number of, you know, American celebrities, you know, added both to the fundraising campaign and added their voices of concern. And I think one of the very interesting things is the way in which these terrible fires have, I think, ignited a very productive debate about the reality of climate change, something that the coalition government, really dating back to Tony Abbott, has often been in denial about, or at the very least they've tried to minimise the importance of climate change. And you can now see that the government's under enormous pressure to actually acknowledge climate change and to stop saying, oh, these fires are business as usual. Mm. And I think that part of that pressure has come through not just traditional international and national media, but also through the big debates that have erupted on social media.
Would that also be that the sort of formally the sort of gatekeeper role that the large News Limited papers had? I mean, certainly their coverage has been quite different on in certain aspects about the bushfires. Do you think that the fact that people can now talk over the top of that and have they provide their own perspective has led to more nuanced debate on the issue of the bushfires?
Well, look, it's interesting you say that. I mean, there's, you know, Rupert Murdoch came out and said, oh, we don't engage in climate denialism. Well, that's rubbish. I mean, there are some very good Murdoch journalists, don't get me wrong, but their voices are often marginalised when it comes to climate change. There's no question that the Australian newspaper has been running an agenda for years, which is in line with Tony Abbott's argument that everyone's in the grip of a climate cult and there's nothing really to see here. You know, they're known for publishing marginalised scientists who are climate deniers, because we know that, you know, over 95% of the scientific community is in consensus that climate change is happening. And so I think, you know, when it comes to the Murdoch media, there's quite a hostility on the part of some Murdoch media commentators towards social media. And I think one of the reasons is that, you know, if we go back even 20 years, the voice of media commentators was able to kind of drown out, if you like, a whole range of other voices. But increasingly social media is now a very dominant place where people exchange information, get their news, have debates. And in a sense, it shows that traditional media, you know, is being marginalised, and the influence of traditional media is, well, certainly with the Murdoch press, is much smaller than it was. I think if you look at the ABC in Australia, the role that the ABC performs has become more and more valuable because of its independence and its very intelligent fact-based reporting.
So regional media also is suffering a sort of consolidation in many newsrooms. So do you think that social media, as a result, is often used now to sort of deal with the sort of tyranny of distance, you know, to provide that adequate spread of information so we can find out about these stories in distant parts of the country? I mean, I'm thinking of things like the Menindee fish kill, which I saw through social media and then became a very big news story.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, this is social media at its best. I mean, there's no question that there are, as you suggested in your intro, that there are limits to social media. And I think one of the things we have seen is a kind of development of echo chambers. That's a big problem, I think, because, you know, it's very easy to just get siloed into listening to people that already agree with you. And that's probably not ultimately healthy for democracy. And also social media allows people, because they have a certain sense of anonymity, to be very polemic and even abusive. And I mean, anyone with a social media account with a reasonable following will have experienced having to block people. So trolling is a real problem. But I also think we're still in the early days, relatively speaking, of working out what the ethics of social media use look like. And I think something that humans have always been quite good at doing is coming to a kind of collective sense of what the limits of a particular medium are. So, I mean, I think the debates about the limits of social media are equally important ones to have, and we should be having them in a healthy democracy.
So, I mean, what's interesting, so we've got, social media has the potential to also spread rumours and spread fake misinformation. So we're getting in this position where we're trying to find mechanism ways of verifying. I mean, do you think that is the next challenge, or is finding means? There's so much sort of content that can easily be proliferated that's fake. Do you think that finding ways to be able to verify content will be one of the next important areas for social media to deal with?
That's a very important question. And, I mean, I think this is the new frontier, really. And what we're going to start to see is that these large transnational global corporations, which is what they are, like Google, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, are increasingly being called to account. Because, I mean, in a way, what we've done is... We've given these companies enormous power, because, you know, we tend to think, oh, social media is free. Well, it's not free. We're trading our data. I mean, in a sense, if the Australian government said, oh, we're going to put a location tracker on all of you, and even though we'll say it's anonymous data, we could very easily work out where you live, where you work, all of these sorts of things, that people would be very sensitive to the government knowing every kind of minute detail of their everyday life. But we do that every day just by holding a smartphone in our hands. So, I mean, I think that's a huge debate that's coming down the track. More pressure will be put on social media and companies like Google to be accountable. And part of that will also be being accountable for the content on their platforms, because in the past they've always run the argument that no, we're not content providers. I'm just a search engine, or I'm just a platform. You know, I'm not responsible for what is put up. Well, post the last American election, we're starting to see a demand in democracies, at least, for more accountability.
All right. Well, that was Professor Catherine Lumby from Macquarie University. She's just talking to us about the role of social media.